Tonight we'll be playing a program that has been as often requested as any we've had down through the years. The one with John Jacob Niles, the late Mr. Niles, and his reflections on his songs and other things, too. He's not hesitant about explaining them, too. And 1957 was the year this program occurred, 30 years ago. The program in a moment after this message. In folklore and folk music, Mr. John Jacob Niles. And I've been looking forward to meeting Mr. Niles for a long, long time, ever since I heard his early recordings on Victor 78's. And practically every folk artist who passed through Chicago speaks of the contributions of this man to our literature, American folk music and folklore. Mr. Niles, that dulcimer you're playing, sir, how would you describe it?
Sir, it's a box containing a very definitely known number of cubic centimeters. We worked it out very carefully in the science department, University of Kentucky. It is shaped like a teardrop. The sides are made of walnut, the back is walnut, and the top is Carpathian spruce. I got this piece of spruce out of an old piano destroyed in the flood in Louisville, Kentucky in 36. You see, this dulcimer is only about 20 years old. My other dulcimers are everywhere from 25 to 40 or 50 years old. As the dulcimer developed, as I developed, I mean to say this present dulcimer doesn't exist anywhere in the world except right on this table.
Well, you, sir, make dulcimers.
Absolutely made it, because my great-grandfather was a piano manufacturer, and it got into the family, this business of making an instrument. My mother used to say, look, little boy, you want some special kind of an instrument, go on, make it. And that was the way I was encouraged to. My father gave me lumber, he gave me all the tools in the world, he gave me a shop, anything I wanted. I'm afraid I was indulged.
Yours, sir, then, is a one-man economy, you might say. You make the instrument as well as you make some of the songs you sing, too.
Absolutely.
In a sense.
I believe that it has made a strange character of me. I am very difficult. I'm hard to please.
At the same time, one of the rare beings today, a rugged individual.
Well, I'm afraid that that's too so, too. Now, the dulcimer, as I had got a hold of it as a little boy, was strung this way. 115, bum, bum, bum. And the reason it was strung that way is because they had what they call a noting stick. I don't see anything here in the studio, but any kind of a stick you could run up and down that first string and get something that approximated a tune. For me, I never needed to do that. You see, the equipment I had to begin with was a voice. And musicology taught me by my mother at a very early age. So I didn't need to play tunes. I could sing the blooming tunes. Therefore, I supported the tune with harmonic structure. That is to say, but that wasn't enough. I very soon realized that I needed that extra tonic. I said, Father, I want to put four strings on the dulcimer. He said, well, don't argue with me. Go on, put them on. I did that. Suddenly, I found myself in business with a four-string dulcimer. Then I could do and the minor relation was very simple there. You see that? All right. My father took me to hear the Chicago Symphony Orchestra under the direction of a great man named Thomas.
Theodore Thomas.
Theodore Thomas was magnificent. He was a friend of my grandfather's. They were both Germans together. I'm sure thought Thomas was a German because I remember him talking and drinking beer with my grandfather.
In other words, he took you up to Chicago, this was?
They were Louisville. Visiting. They came to Louisville.
They were visiting Louisville.
Louisville. And I sang in their chorus. You see, they had a chorus. I don't remember what it was, but I was a little tiny boy singer, about 7 or maybe 8. And I sat in a part of this choral group near the percussions. And I saw these magnificent drums. And I came home and I said, Father, I want to put the drums on the dulcimer. He said, boy, I've said you could do anything you like, but he said, I don't see how you can possibly put a drum on the dulcimer. Now let's be smart. I said, I think I can get it with strings. He says, if you can get it with strings, you're a genius. I want you to try it. 6 months later, I had this, sir.
And so you added the
percussion
effect.
There they were. Bum, 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 bum. I had my drums, you see. I had the percussion effects. Now, here's what you've got, then. As simple as that.
So you have orchestral accompaniment, yes. In the sense.
And then, you see, I can start the thing going that way, and those strings carry on. No matter what else I do, they're going, and they keep on going all the way through this other harmonic structure. And I can do it in the major key, they're still good. I can do it in the minor key, they're still good.
Well, sir, suppose you use that dulcimer for the moment as the background, the accompaniment of the song that you told me you had heard when very young. Your father sang the Mohi, the song of Little Mohi.
He would open everything. Every time he went to sing anything, he started with a Mohi. And I have done exactly the same thing.
What about Little Mohi?
That's right.
What is the story of Little Mohi? It's the Indian maiden.
It's an Indian maiden. I believe that it is a version, a rather polished up, cleaned up, shall I say, expurgated version of a song sung by British sailors. And if you will go to the trouble, sir, next time you're in Cambridge, Massachusetts, they have a little school up there called Harvard College. And they have there a library, a magnificent library, rare book library. And in that library, they have the broadside collection. And there you can find, if you convince them that you're
I'm adult and broad-minded.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to carry it out mm-hmm. in your inside pocket. You can see the original text of the Mohi. And I tell you, sir, it is something to behold. Not for juveniles.
Well, this is Mohi, the same tune as Top of Old
Smoky. No. Not, yes, indeed.
As Top of
the
Old
tune Smoky. Is an American invention. You see, our tunes are all our own. They're not English tunes at all.
Oh, the tunes are American
Absolutely,
inventions.
Absolutely, sir. We must get that all straight.
You mean the story is
The story is English. The story is Scottish. The story comes back from Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Finland, all the way into the Baltic states, and finally into Hungary, and ultimately to Turkey, and to out into Pakistan, and finally into India. But the tunes are ours.
Is this.
Don't be deceived.
Oh, in other words, Little Mohi originally may have had some other tunes.
The text and the tunes were entirely different. Entirely.
Well, sir, let's hear your, shall we say, one instrument orchestra, this dulcimer, sir, as a background to your Little Mohi.
Right. As I went out walking alone one fine day, I got awful lonesome as the day passed away. I sat down a-musing alone on the grass, when who should walk by me but a sweet Indian lass. She come and sat by me and took hold of my hand, said, you're sure a stranger out in a far strange land. She asked me to marry and offered her hand, said, my puppy's a chieftain all over this land. My pappy's a chieftain and a ruler be he. I'm his only daughter and my name is Mohi. I answered and told her that it never could be, 'cause I had a dear sweetheart in my own country. I will not forsake her 'cause I know she loves me. Her heart is as true as any Mohi. So I'm going to leave you now. Farewell you, my dear. There's wind in my canvas. To my home I must steer. At home with relations I tried for to see, but they were out of one like my lovely Mohi. And the girl I had trusted proved untrue to me. So I sailed back on the ocean to my lovely Mohi.
Lo, the poor Indian maiden. Did she, there's so many versions of this. Did her sweetheart return to her, or did he leave her forever?
I think he returned to her. It's one of those extraordinary happy endings. We do not have many of them, you know. The American girl double-crossed this poor lad, this believing, trusting sailor boy. And he went back to this Indian. I don't know how how it worked out. I wonder the crossing of bloods. I wonder what happened. Can you see?
Who knows? He might have been.
He may have produced Nehru.
He may have become Richard Dix in the movies.
He may have produced Nehru.
Or Nehru, possibly. What about these songs that you sing? These love songs seem to be your most oft requested of songs, aren't they?
The love song is because it is more easily absorbed and assimilated by the public. And the public, I think now I'm trying to be a psychologist. The female listening to the love song puts herself exactly in the place of the girl. The male listening to the love song is this conquering man who carries it away.
Well, isn't this one of the strengths of folk music compared to a pop song? It's so specific.
Absolutely.
A Lass from the Low Country, for example. Now, this was a child ballad, was it not?
No, The Lass from the Low Country was an out-and-out love song. I've never found it in the child collection, never. And it came to me from a strange little man down there in North Carolina who had never been out of the county but once in his life. Where he got it from, no one seems to know.
And yet the flavor it has is old world.
Absolutely. And absolutely. It has that heartbroken quality that goes with the Shakespearean lyric, you know. I'm not smart enough to figure those things out. And furthermore, I've got too many other things to do. I'm too old to start now. The man's dead, too. So, therefore, we're stymied.
This is the case, then, of the girl who secretly, to herself, loves this man of high degree.
How many times has happened in the history of the world? Every day in the week, you find cases of it everywhere. This yearning of one human being for a relation in a higher level, you see. She smiles and she spoke. Think of that. Think how naive that is. And he walked right on by, possibly going to the hunt or going off to the lists or going off to the Crusades and never even raised his eyes.
How does that beautiful last line go? No one knew it.
No
one
knows she loved him but herself and God. Yeah. Oh, my goodness, what heartbreak.
Suppose, Mr. Niles, you regale us with that then.
All right.
Lass from the Low Country.
Oh, she was a lass from the Low Country, and he was a lover of high degree. But she loved his lordship so tenderly. Oh, so sweet a song. Now she sleeps in the valley. God. One morn when the sun was on the mead, he patted her door on a milk-white steed. She smiled and she spoke, but he paid no heed. Oh, now she sleeps in the valley where the wildflowers nod, and no one knows she loved him but herself and God. If you be a lass from the country, don't love her, no lord or have high degree. They ain't got a heart for sympathy. Now she sleeps in the valley where the wildflowers nod, and no one knows she loved him but herself and God.
Well, thus far we've had cases of the unrequited love on the part of a girl. I think isn't the beauty of folk song the strength of the fact that it does not discriminate against one gender on behalf of another? Isn't it the case of a girl who rebuffs the guy? We have that too, for example.
Black is the color of my true love's hair.
Black is the color of Go Away From My Window,
go
too.
Away from my window.
Well, where did that come from?
Go Away From My Window I wrote for a girl with blue eyes and blonde hair.
This is your own song.
Oh, I wrote it, yes, sir. Words and music.
Let's touch upon that for a moment.
Well, you know, my father engaged a colored man named Obdrawl Jacket. At least that's the way his name was in the was in the pay book, and he was a wonderful boy, powerful, strong ditch digger. I worked beside him.